During the pandemic lockdown, one of the ways I cared for my spirit was by listening to podcasts. Of all of the new to me sources of insight, comfort, and wisdom I discovered, the most powerful was The Confessional by Nadia Bolz Weber. A Lutheran pastor whose ministry has always been about serving those whom the church traditionally excluded, Weber called her podcast no BS space for people to talk about the moments in our lives we are least proud of. You can imagine how hard it was for her to find guests. Every episode is riveting, but the one I still think about nearly 4 years later was her interview with Megan Phelps Roper. Megan was raised in the Westboro Baptist Church, a fundamentalist church founded by her grandfather that's best known for things like protesting at soldiers' funerals. They believe every bad thing that happens is a punishment from God and that they are supposed to get America to repent by drawing attention to these tragedies. Megan was raised on a compound with other church members, given signs to hold at public protests with hurtful messages on them from the time she was 4 and 5 years old. A true believer, by the time she was a young adult, she saw social media as a tool to spread Westboro's message, at least until she began actually engaging with people outside of her church on Twitter. Some people dismissed her and her hurtful views immediately. Some people sort of, you know, went for the low hits and, you know, called her stupid and all sorts of things. But a few appealed to her humanity. And a few months into her Twitter evangelism, the first big crack in her belief system began to form. Someone on Twitter sent her a photo essay about a famine in Somalia, and the first picture was of a starving child, and it really, really affected her. Her mother was delighted to see this picture that was causing people so much upset, and she used it to make another poster for one of their protests. And Megan noticed how her church would delight in these tragedies, but people on social media were filled with compassion for those who were suffering. Compassion seemed to be missing from Westboro's message, but she was finding it in places like Twitter. Megan went on to leave the Westboro church, which for her also meant leaving almost all of her family. She rejected the faith she was raised in, letting go of a lot of what she was taught to believe, adding in new beliefs she'd examined for herself. And it's clear that this process has been painful. It's also clear that it's given her purpose. She's now a political activist who speaks publicly in support of many of the groups that she grew up protesting. Megan Phelps Roper's experience deconstructing and reconstructing faith is much more extreme than most. She had to leave everything she knew in order to follow where the truth was leading her. But even most people who didn't grow up in fundamentalist families or faiths must face the challenge of deconstruction at some point. A lot of people find congregations like this one after they've begun their deconstruction, attracted to the pluralism and mutual acceptance and appreciation for diversity of many kinds that we strive to nurture here. Since our faith encourages us to make our search for truth a lifetime project, I thought, let's think about that for a bit. In the 50s and 60s, a philosopher named Paul Ricoeur developed a three-stage way of understanding how people approach truth. He called it a hermeneutical arc. I'm going to call it the stages of meaning-making. The first stage he named the first naivete. This is a stage of understanding when we simply accept what we've been taught, whatever that happens to be. This is a pre-critical stage. Children are often in this stage. Adults can also be too. This is a literalist viewpoint. Ricoeur's second stage is criticism. People in this stage notice the contradictions between the beliefs they were raised with and the realities in the world and the people around them. They no longer accept some or all sacred stories and teachings at face value. They are approaching the world through a critical lens, we might say. And the critical stage of making meaning can be so difficult that a lot of people just stop there. Some seem to stop out of anger. Others stop out of fear, afraid maybe of being misled again. But for Ricoeur, there is a stage beyond criticism, and he calls it the second naivete. I think Brian McLaren in our prayer called it the second innocence. People in this stage accept the wisdom that criticism has taught them, but then continue searching for truth again anyway. In this post-critical stage, sacred stories and texts and rituals function not as literal truth, but as symbols that point to deeper truth. I've heard it explained this way. People who wear glasses don't look at their glasses to see the world better. They look through their glasses to see the world better. And in the same way, we can look through sacred texts and stories and rituals and holidays to perceive new truth. Deconstruction and reconstruction, this process that Ricoeur talks about, that other philosophers and theologians have sort of made their own stages around, this process has been on my mind a lot lately. As this country and indeed our whole world becomes more divided, as people hold ever more tightly onto their positions on the issues, no matter what they are, I can't stop thinking about Megan Phelps Roper's story. Because it wasn't the people who asked her how she could be so stupid to believe what she'd been raised to believe that actually helped her. Funny thing about that. It wasn't the people canceling her, trying to make her feel bad about herself. No, it was the people who appealed to her humanity, the people who showed her compassion. I can't even count the number of times I've asked myself, how can anybody believe that about one thing or another? And yet, I look back through my own life, through my own journey of becoming, and I can find plenty of things I used to believe that embarrass me now. Plenty. A friend and colleague of mine is fond of saying that humans move through the world like giant projection screens, projecting our own fears and insecurities in every interaction we have with other people. So perhaps when we find ourselves asking, how can anyone believe that? We are also asking, how could I have ever believed that? Or maybe, could I have ever believed something like that if I'd been born to a different family, with a different identity, raised in a different way? Would I have believed that? Would I have made it to the critical stage? There are a lot of things that make deconstructing and reconstructing faith hard. But I think the hardest is the inner work we must do to find humility and compassion, not just for others, but for ourselves. Not for the beliefs. I'm not suggesting we work on finding compassion for the idea that anyone deserves to suffer, that some people are less important or have less dignity than others. No way. That is not what I'm saying. But I'm not sure how to continue growing as a kind and open and loving person without finding compassion for the living, breathing people who believe those things. We are living in a time when extremism of all kinds is growing. And as the climate crisis on this planet intensifies, the threat of extremism is only going to grow. But our call as religious liberals is not just to create a haven for people who think and believe all of the same things that we do. Our call is to work for our values in our community, both through advocacy at the local, state, and national levels, but also through our personal relationships with our neighbors. And in that work, we're going to encounter people who believe things that make our toes curl. We are going to encounter people who don't respect us for who we are or what we believe or who we love. I can't tell you how many times I've been told I'm going to hell because it's a sin for a woman to serve as a pastor. And of course, I think, gee, if only you knew more about me. But anyway, that's beside the point. Is it upsetting when people say things like that to me? Sure. Should I allow that energy to dictate my response? Well, I'm human. Sometimes I have. But if our focus is the work, the building of a better world, then I think we must find a way to engage even meanness with compassion. I'm not saying I'm good at it yet. We can't control what other people do or say, but we can practice getting in touch with our own minds so we can choose how we respond in different situations. We can choose to respond in ways that exacerbate extremist tendencies, or we can choose to act in ways that interrupt and mitigate them. I hear people all the time, I'm about to go there, so brace yourselves. I hear people all the time ask me why Unitarian Universalism isn't a larger or better known religion. And I have some theories, but I think part of it is the reputation that liberals have for a kind of arrogance. Even if someone manages to make it to the critical stage of meaning making, even if they are interested in constructing a new faith, why on earth would they want to join another community that thinks other faiths aren't as lightened as we are? That thinks it's better than everybody else? That's what they've sacrificed so much and worked so hard to leave behind, just in a different form. The presidential election campaign is revving up, folks, and it's going to trigger all sorts of stuff inside each and every one of us. Anger, fear, revulsion, resentment, you name it, it's coming. We are going to encounter people in physical and virtual spaces who will say and do things that will upset us deeply. It's coming. Have we done the work? The day-to-day work it takes to stay centered amid what may be coming. Are we prepared to respond in ways that are informed not just by our emotions, not by our ego, but by our values, by who we want to be in our highest selves? If ever there was a time when the world needs people to be their best selves, it is now. And in the days to come. If ever there was a time the world needs us to be clear about our purpose as a liberal religious community, it is now. If ever there was a time when the world needs people who can do more than just reject old stories and rituals out of hand and instead learn to look through them for new truths, look through them to find God, the holy, truth, deep meaning everywhere. It is now. Do we exist primarily as a social club for people who fall in the center circle of the liberal beliefs Venn diagram? Is that what we exist to do? Or do we exist to serve something larger than ourselves? Do we exist not just to reject extremism, but to interrupt it? Because if we want to be about advocacy work to change our community, to serve justice, to make sure all people in our society have enough so their lives can flourish, then we have to find a way to meet even people who hold beliefs we find abhorrent with compassion. And we have to be about making sure our free faith is known not for a sense of superiority, but for our welcome and for our love. May we all find blessings on our journey to construct a set of beliefs we can claim with a straight face. A faith we can claim without having to cross our fingers behind our backs. May we all find the time and space we need to center down deep within ourselves to our deepest held truths and the peace that is only available here and now in every moment. May we all find the humility to remember that we have not always been who we are now, believed all that we do now. May we find compassion for ourselves and others, for the people we once were, for the work it takes to move into the critical stage of meaning-making and then back out of it again. May we grow and mature in our own sense of meaning and self, that we can offer others judgment-free space to demo and reno their own faith. And in so doing, may we help our free faith come to be known for our welcome, for our compassion, and for our love. Amen.